got a crazy ass true story to tell. It could be funny or thrilling or creepy as hell. And when you speak, surely none will make a sound. And the world's going breathless when your true story comes around.
Welcome back to Your Best True Story podcast, where we get you guys to call in and tell us your best true stories. We play them on the air and then we discuss them. And that's pretty much the whole show. We are excited to have you here. And FCAT, are you ready to hear a whole new batch of stories?
I am. I made it through the eclipse. I am still here and excited to hear some stories.
That is true. Since the last time we recorded, there's been some a good bit of interesting news. The eclipse.
Yep.
We might be going into World War III with Iran.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah.
P. Diddy might be the Jeffrey Epstein of rap.
He apparently.
Yep. All kinds of good stuff.
Dragging people down with him.
Yeah. But unfortunately, we're probably not going to discuss any of that
none,
right now.
Nope.
Because we've got too many fascinating calls to go over. Today, we've got five calls into us, ranging everything from a couple of paranormal calls, one of which is pretty disturbing. We've got a near and trigger warning near suicide attempt from one caller that actually turns out to be pretty inspirational. Then we've got a murder phone call, which is just a little disturbing. Then we've got a funny drunk phone call to
end
the calls with. So a whole smorgasbord of calls for you to
it's
hear.
It's a buffet.
Buddy. Yeah, buffet of interesting things. And just for anybody that's new to the show, real quick, I do want to mention that our winner from last month, which part of what this show does is just for the fun of it, we kind of let the audience vote every month on whatever story they found was the most interesting. And then we not only give that person $250, but we invite them on the show to be interviewed. And I believe it might have been your favorite call from last month, Shay, speaking of her monkey crime experience, is the winner.
Yes.
So we'll be trying to see if she'll come on the show. But yep, that's a good, I think that was just last episode that she was on, but definitely one to check out if you haven't heard that before.
Yeah, that was an entertaining one.
Yep, so we'll be reaching out to Shay, and then everybody else listening, just call in any subject matter. We will get it played on the air. If it's entertaining, then you'll be in the running to potentially win that $250 for yourself and get invited on the show to be interviewed in a longer format. So getting into the calls without further ado, the first thing I wanted to mention to you and the audience, Freddie, is have you ever heard the term Vardager? And I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right or not. Scandinavian.
Vardager?
Yeah, that's a better pronunciation than me.
I have not. I have not.
Yep. So a Vardager is closely related to the concept of a doppelganger.
Oh, that I have heard.
Yep, but this call, I think, is probably more appropriately termed as a Vardager. And I'll give you the definition of that. It is, hold on one second. It is, according to Wikipedia, Vardager stories typically include instances that are nearly deja vu in substance, but in reverse, where a spirit with the subject's footsteps, voice, scent, or even appearance and overall demeanor precedes them in a location or activity, resulting in witnesses believing they've seen or heard the actual person before the person physically arrives. So the differences between a Vardager and a doppelganger, as far as I can tell, is typically doppelgangers are have more sinister connotations. It's like a person that you don't typically run into, but other people say are out there that appears to be you doing things. And then the Vardager, which I even think I might have experienced a little bit of this when I was a kid. A Vardager is, in the fullest sense, it is when you are like at a location and a friend is supposed to show up. You see the friend showing up like physically see them get out of their car or whatever, absolutely recognize them as a real living person, think it's your buddy. They go around a corner or something and then they're gone. And then 15 minutes later, your actual friend shows up.
Oh, wow.
And where I kind of think I experienced this is like in the Scandinavian explanation of this, it's very common to have this experience in an auditory only sense, which is what I actually pretty distinctly remember happening when I was a kid, of thinking I would hear family members come home. Like you would hear all the typical things, like you'd be in another room and hear like footsteps, keys being dropped, that kind of, maybe even some voices. And then when you go out into the room, there's no one there. And then within a little bit of time, that person or those people are coming in.
I've had that happen, but not with people, but you know, when you have a pet for, you know, 15 years and then you don't, then you hear them.
Yeah.
Like you hear the sounds, you hear, you hear the normality of their existence.
Yeah. And it seems
echoing.
Yep. And it seems like with the Vardiger thing, it's sort of like that, very similar to like almost like what you would call a paranormal ghost encounter, but it's somehow time wise, it's in the future. It's predicting an actual event.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. And so before, we'll discuss more about that, but let me play for you Aiden's call from Oakland, California, where he describes from his childhood what I am calling a kitchen Vardiger experience.
Hey guys, this is Aiden from the Northern California East Bay area, and I didn't think at first that I had any paranormal stories or anything interesting, but then one of your prior episodes kind of reminded me of something that happened when I was a kid, and I figured I'd just roll the dice and send the story in. And so it happened, like I said, when I was a kid still living at home, and it was just an average Saturday afternoon, and my mom and my brother decided to go to the grocery store, and I decided to stay at home. I didn't go with them this time. And so I walk out as they are getting in the car and driving off down the driveway, and I'm excited because since the car is gone, I can actually use the basketball hoop and shoot some hoops. So that's what I do for the first half hour that they're gone or so, as I'm just playing basketball by myself in the driveway. Eventually, I get kind of bored with that and decide to walk around to the other side of the house, kind of the backyard area, where I've been working on trying to get my mountain bike that I bent the handlebars on, trying to get the handlebars straightened out and get them back attached to the mountain bike. So I start wrestling with that, and as I'm doing it, the important thing is that I can see in the kitchen window from where I'm at working on the bike. And through the window, I see both my mom and my older brother walk back in and start putting groceries away, opening up cabinets, you know, opening up the fridge, talking to each other, putting groceries up in various places. So that's all normal. Nothing strange about that. I keep on working on my bike. And as I get the handlebars reattached where it seems like I can drive it to me, I decide I'm going to pedal around on it just to test it out. And I hop on the bike and start to pedal around back to the front of the house where the driveway is. And that's why I noticed there's no car in the driveway. So that's pretty strange, because it had been just a few minutes ago that I'd looked in the window and seen my mom and brother there. So I think immediately, like, wow, that's weird. They must have forgotten something and headed back to the grocery store to get it. But it was such a quick time frame that I couldn't quite get my brain around it. So I go up to the window on the kitchen door next to the driveway, look in and confirm nobody's in there. And it doesn't even look like anyone has been in there. There's no groceries laying out, none of the cabinet doors open, anything like that. But, I mean, you know, maybe they did just decide to go back to the grocery store, I think. So that's fine. End up playing around, horsing around on my bike a little bit more for about 15 minutes till they come driving up the driveway. And I think, wow, that was really quick turnaround for them to get back to the grocery store and come back with whatever they forgot. And so as they're pulling into the driveway, I greet them onto my bike and I say, hey, what did you guys forget? And both of them look at me like I've hit my head or something, that I'm not making any sense. And they go on to swear up and down that this is the first time they're coming home, that they have never been home. They didn't forget anything and go back. This is just them returning from the grocery store. And I can't explain to you how bizarre and weird, and it still gives me chills because I swear to you, I saw them in the kitchen through the window. It was not like a hallucination. It wasn't a trick of the light. Like, I could clearly see them for many, many seconds moving around, could hear their muffled voices through the kitchen window talking to each other. It was my mom and my brother, except it couldn't have been because they hadn't got back from the grocery store yet. So that's it. It's pretty bizarre of the one thing that I can think of in my life that happened strange like that. So anyway, if you guys play it, would love to hear what you think. Thanks.
So that would be incredibly bizarre to see actual family members and then them not have been there. Like,
it's almost like it's not a reflection, it's a preflection,
yeah,
of time. So he's kind of dipping into the universe and taking a look at a version of something that happened on one of the timelines, yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's crazy.
And that's what, it's interesting that Scandinavian cultures, that term Vardiger comes from, seem to have this happen like more than the rest of people. Like, I it's a common, not common, but I mean, it's in their lexicon, and like, it's a, yeah, people know what it is, this experience. So
see, my, what I've been used to when you use the word doppelganger, it's been somebody who is not related to you, but yeah, looks like you.
Yeah.
Like, that's, and you know, I've seen a lot of the videos where people just randomly in the airport, they're like, see themselves coming at themselves dressed in the same clothes. Yep. And they're like, hello.
Now, so that is, yeah, the interesting thing is, so there's a definite, that seems to be the difference between the doppelganger effect versus mm-hmm. Vardiger, is the Vardiger is more, premonition or something oriented, mm-hmm. and it involves people very close to you, not you, but uh-huh. people that, or something that you would recognize, I think. And then doppelganger is you, and from everything I can read or see about it online, it seems like it's got a much more negative context, that typically they're either trying to screw up your life, or even I found there's actually pretty fascinating when it comes to historical doppelganger experiences. The poet Percy Shelley, who was married to Mary Shelley, that wrote Frankenstein, and he was a pretty well-known poet in his own day, he ran into his own doppelganger and told everybody about it, and then a week later was dead. He drowned. Catherine the Great, uh-huh. Russian monarch, famously called her guards to her throne room because her doppelganger was sitting on her throne to the degree where she had the guards shoot at it. And I couldn't find good information of what happened to it, if it was like a spirit or a person, but then she died shortly after that. Abraham Lincoln claimed to see his doppelganger shortly before he was assassinated, and even Queen Elizabeth walked into her own bedroom and claimed to see herself standing there, interacting with her, like days before she died. And so it seems the doppelganger thing is definitely like a premonition of bad.
Well, some tidings. Of them I can attribute to clones because of the political power structure where it would be advantageous for somebody. You know, you got Queen Elizabeth number one, who's not doing what she's supposed to be doing. So you've got Queen Elizabeth number two.
Yeah.
All grown and ready.
Do you think they had clones, even if they've got clones now or not? Do you think they had clones back like in Abraham Lincoln's day?
Maybe. Maybe the aliens did, because we're stuck on this timeline where we like, you know, we assume that we've got the latest technology this whole time. What if we've just only been given what we've been given this whole time, and they've had clones all along? But the other thing is, you know, with doppelgangers, I see that a lot of them have a negative connotation. Some of them, like in the world, I guess this simulation only has a certain amount of memory, and it's going to reproduce you maybe 3 to 7 times, you know, out of the billions of people.
Yeah.
There's another 6 gyms out there.
Well, I was going to tell you my own doppelganger experience. When I lived in Montana for about a year, I had people claiming that I had a double out there that like basically looked exactly like me, talked like me, acted like me. And like would sometimes go like into the same, and I didn't live at the time, like I was living in Bozeman, Montana, which is only like 35,000 people. I mean, granted, it's all like it's very kind of close knit community in the downtown area, but still it's like it's not that big.
Yeah.
So you would think, and that went on for like about a year.
Did you ever meet him?
Never ran into it. Never got. And
I got
some of it. I assumed was just me being blackout drunk, talking to people that I forgot. But enough of it was, and some of it was even stuff like they'd be like, "Oh yeah, he was up in Big Sky," which was like a 45-minute drive away to a ski town. And it'd be like, "Yeah, I ran in. I thought it was you. We bought you like a drink," and like, and that was it. So that was pretty bizarre because I had multiple people claiming that.
Through technology these days, there's actually a website. It's called twinstrangers.com, and you upload a picture of yourself, and it'll go through a database of, you know, millions of pictures and find you your doppelgangers.
Oh, weird.
So you upload a picture, it'll go through and been, here's the guy. You have 7 matches. The best match is a 84% match.
Really?
Here they are. Yeah.
Have you done it?
No, I just checked it. I just checked it out briefly today. Wow. I didn't upload the picture, but I saw they have on there some of the ones that they have done.
Yeah,
and you're like, wow, you know, and these people are not related.
I don't know if my self esteem could take that. They'll just match me with someone and be like, I do not look like that, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, well, if you ever get the mental fortitude up to take a look at yourself,
and as well, or it could be the opposite, where that whoever you see is just kicking ass at life, and you're like,
"Wait a second, beautiful.
I could have done that."
Wait a second,
why is his wife so?
This
hot?
Is what I look like.
Yeah,
yeah, you're gonna come out of the room with a whole new glow. But it's out there for, you know, for the non-evil doppelganger seekers.
Yeah.
You know? Huh.
Interesting. Well, I will have to check that out. And so I think, all right, going into the second phone call, it's sort of going to, I think, just naturally kind of evolve from this first one into a potential discussion maybe about a thing called morphic resonance, or how everything is kind of interrelated. So this is a phone call from a woman named Carolyn that is a author. She's written a book called Unbreakable, and that's why I'm going to title her call, because it's actually about what led her, the couple of sort of scary events that led her to write the book Unbreakable. And then she's also a public speaker, and goes around and speaks a lot, it looks like, at high schools to try and do a lot of positive stuff of helping kids to overcome, like, you know, insecurities, mental challenges, stuff like that, life challenges. And so she's got an interesting story about what led her to write the book, and we'll hear from Carolyn in Pennsylvania right now.
Imagine you're sitting in the car in the backseat middle. All of a sudden, you have this feeling you are about to die. You look back, look front, and you see that this car is flying at you, which means that maybe death is on the horizon. This might be it. I grabbed my seatbelt a few seconds before the crash, but the car was totaled and we were T-boned. It was a hit and run, and they never found the person who did this. Now picture, on the other hand, you having the choice to live your life or not. Picture yourself in college, freshman year. It's the fall semester and you hear everyone having a great time with their friends. It reminds you of how alone you are, since you never felt like you ever fit in. You're sitting there on your dorm bed alone, realizing and feeling like nothing is going to get better. Feeling like you are trapped, feeling like you are alone and that there is no way out, that this pain, that this feeling of never being enough and feeling of never gonna fit in and being unlovable and having people just not like me was the feeling that I felt every single day. I didn't have a group in college. And well, this fall night, I was the person you were picturing. I was on my bed and I heard all this commotion. I heard everyone having a great time and everything. And it made me realize I didn't belong here anymore. No one would care if I was here or not. So I made a plan to end my life that night. And just when I was about to do it, literally right as I was about to do it, my phone rang. And it was my best friend, Nomi. And if it would have been anyone else, I wouldn't have answered. But I picked up sobbing and told her I couldn't do this anymore. Now think about both of these two stories. One was by choice, and one was just praying that I would make it out of there alive. Life is a very, very precious thing, but that's not something I really fully believed until I was much older, until that life-threatening car accident, which inspired me to use my voice. After the car accident, I was sitting on my couch watching How I Met Your Mother, to be exact, and I was thinking of the number two. And what it really was those two instances, once by choice and once just praying I was going to make it out alive. And because I knew this wasn't a coincidence, I knew I had to dive in deeper. I knew there was more to this whole thing. One thing led to another, and Unbreakable, my first book, came to be. I am so proud of this book because I put my heart and soul into it, and I truly hope that people can find hope, inspiration, and just know that things do get better in life. Writing Unbreakable was the most healing thing I've ever done in my entire life. But being able to share my story, being able to share things that I went through so that hopefully no one else has to go through, it's literally my purpose. I believe my sole purpose in life is to use my voice, which is why I do what I do, which is why I'm so passionate about mental health, which is why I'm so passionate about being kind to everyone. And mental health is something that will always be a part of us. We just have to figure out how we can handle it, how we can live our best lives. Unbreakable, being that book, was something that I never would have thought I could have ever done in a million years. But this just goes to show you that hope, resilience, it all comes into play. But I also now am a public speaker, and I speak about overcoming these struggles, overcoming the impossible, overcoming things you never thought that you would ever get through. But now I realize that my story and my experiences of how I got really badly bullied, my experiences with depression and anxiety, my experiences of feeling alone, was a feeling that it wasn't just me who was feeling that. A lot of people feel alone. I just want to help you use my voice and change the world for the better.
And so I think that is an awesome message that Carolyn is trying to send. And when I checked out her website and book, looks like great material. If anybody wants to check out her book or her public speaking, then we're going to link to that in the show notes. Her name's Carolyn Scourin, and it will be linked in the show notes below. Her book is Unbreakable. And one thing I was going to say, I mean, that's a before we get into the particulars of what I think is most fascinating about that, of the phone call that she got right before she was about to do the unthinkable. I was going to say, just as a public speaker, you know, the SpeakPipe thing that we have set up, it's currently set for a 5-minute time limit.
Yeah.
She conveyed that story and all of that in 4 minutes and 59 seconds.
Oh, man.
Exactly. Hmm. So I suspect she's an extremely good public speaker.
Yeah.
That takes some skill to nail that in exactly 4 minutes and 59 seconds. But yeah, as far as the morphic resonance thing, that's where I was going to bring that up into this is, have you ever had an experience with that? Like, I mean, obviously her emotion, she was probably in an extremely intense emotional state.
Mm-hmm.
And then to get a phone call from her friend, basically saving her life before she did it, that to me, and I can read a little bit about what the morphic field theory is and morphic resonance, but it's basically just the concept that we're all connected on a kind of low level, either telepathic or energetic basis. Have you ever had anything similar to that happen?
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, abilities that we have that aren't fostered or, you know, really brought up very much. But, you know, one example that people probably can relate to is if you've ever felt somebody staring at you.
Yep.
From behind.
Yep.
Like when you don't know what's happening, but all of a sudden you kind of get a ting. You're like, what's happening? You turn around and then somebody's staring at you. That is just a little clue that we have these senses that we don't really know we have, you know, being one of them.
That actually, the main, I believe he's English doctor that created the theory of morphic fields and morphic resonance to explain these phenomenons. He's actually done studies with that exact phenomenon of like actual controlled tests, where he has apparently proven that specific ability to know when somebody is staring at you does exist in a majority of the population. He also did it in a test on dogs knowing before their masters came home that they sort of proved beyond any reasonable doubt that dogs actually, it's not that they're just luck or that there's some other noise they're responding to, or that's a pattern, that dogs actually often have the telepathic ability to know when somebody is heading home. And that's what they get excited about, even though the person hasn't arrived yet.
Yeah. And one of the other ideas with morphic resonance is that as a species, when enough of the species becomes aware of something, it gets transmuted to the rest of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, rats, they did
brought that up before.
Yeah, with monkeys washing sweet potatoes on one island. Once they learned that was an easy way to get things done and clean to eat, monkeys on another island started washing them.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, how is this happening? They're separated and none of the monkeys swim. But they do these kind of tests with animals all the time, with rats. And then now they were like, I saw one video, they were talking about the game Wordle, or the app like Wordle.
Yeah.
You know, where it should be easier in the afternoon to solve it because so many people have solved it earlier in the day. Like as a human, you know, it's uploaded into the ether or whatever, where we can all subconsciously connect to it.
Yeah.
And They haven't worked, but they have all the data to test that theory. They just haven't done it yet. Like, if you actually got into that app and downloaded and looked at the times of how long people took to do it in the at 7 a.m. in the morning versus 4 in the afternoon, and how many people have completed the task, you know, they want to test for that, you know.
Interesting. Yeah.
So we have these abilities.
I think almost everybody has experienced the thing where you feel like somebody is about to call you, and then you get the phone call. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty common thing. I know I've experienced that.
Or you pick up the phone and call somebody,
and they're like,
wow, your ears must have, we even have a term for it. Your ears must have been ringing.
Yeah.
Because we were just talking about you. So
I remember also there have been a couple instances where I think you've got to be, there's got to be definitely an emotional connection, strong emotional connection between the people or the group or something that allows that messaging to come through, basically.
I'm sure that there's levels to it. I'm sure that there's like animals that are born and just know how to do things. And, you know, that generation or two or three generations before them just learned how to do those things. Yeah. But then every generation after them knows that inherently. Yeah. So you have that level of just nature. And then on top of that, I think you can go up and create pathways yourself via the emotional connections.
Yep.
You know, and enhance what is already there on an underlying ability basis.
It's almost a scary thought to some degree if there is an underlying basis of telepathic communication going on
between humans,
but we just don't, we've been trained to not recognize it so much.
Yeah.
When you're either from somebody getting a positive emotion from somebody, or like you just get the feeling like that person hates my guts. Well, maybe they really do.
Your biospheres might be talking. You ever have like somebody that just walks in the room and their energy talks to your energy, and you're like either super attracted or super repelled?
I don't have that a lot because I think I have trained myself to not. I've trained myself to
You be hate so, everybody, Jim?
Yeah, I've trained myself to loathe humans. That's what everybody's picking
he's,
up on.
He's
with
trained
me
himself
is,
to
Jesus,
reject
this,
everyone
this
and everything
everybody.
Immediately.
Yeah, yeah. It's easier. It's just easier that way for me.
Well, some other people in our species can feel people's energy right when they, you know, I've had that with one individual. I just couldn't be around him. And it was just like magnets, opposite of.
Was
you know?
He a friend of, we're
yes.
Friends of, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I told you that. Like, in,
but I remember, and even I remember when you tell me that, I was just like, I don't get it. He's kind of goofy, but like, what's the big deal?
It was unnerving. Yeah, unnerving the energy that he put out. Yeah. Weird. It was very weird because I don't have that a lot, you know.
Yeah.
But so that may be connected to the same thing we're talking about, or it might be, you know, just an offshoot.
I've definitely had a little bit of premonition in important things, I would say. I was debating if I, because Carolyn's story reminded me of the story, and I'll go ahead and tell it. It's kind of personal, but, basically, at one point in my life, this actually happened when I was living in Montana too. I hadn't spoken, me and my dad had a very contentious relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't spoken to him in probably 4 years at this point. He dealt with a ton of depression and stuff like that. And, so I get one of my roommates knocking on my door at 6 a.m., which was super early for me to be waking up at that time. And it was pulling me out of a dream that I had with, where in the dream I was having this intense dream that my father was laid out on like a marble slab, almost looking like Jesus. Mm. And I was trying to get to him to tell him I loved him before he died. in the dream. And this is like, we were very estranged, hadn't talked to him in several years. So I get this knock on my door, my roommate saying, somebody's on the phone for you. Cause this was back when we still had, like, there was one landline phone in the apartment. And so I'm like, what the fuck? 6 a.m. And I get up and, like, so I'm thinking it must be an emergency or something. And I go and answer the phone. It's my dad, who I haven't talked to in 4 years, that is obviously sounding depressed and goes into just right away into some bizarre story about how his father died. And I listened to the whole thing. And for the, I had this incredibly overwhelming compulsion that I needed to tell my father right then that I loved him or he was going to kill himself.
Wow.
And I did it. And that was the first, I told him I loved him and hoped he was feeling better and all this, couldn't wait. I was, like, said something like I plan on coming home for Christmas that year, like basically kind of mended a little bit of the fence for the first time in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And my father didn't kill himself, and I never got any confirmation that that was going to occur, but still the weird coincidences of that.
Yeah.
I was having a dream of him dying. He calls to tell me about his father dying.
Yeah.
Like, it was just too many bizarre things going on for there not to be some paranormal connection.
Yeah, you totally had a message for him that he needed to hear.
Yeah, so I still to this day, yeah, think that might have been the case. But yeah, so there's weird stuff out there, Freddie. Weird stuff going on, and it's about to get weirder with call number 3.
Oh, all right.
And now this is getting well, I feel like we've been a little grounded now. We're about to blast off, so. Prepare yourself. I'd just say you're familiar with the term shadow people, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Well, this is just your common shadow people killing everyone story.
All right.
I live in Phoenix, but I'm in Sweden right now, 2 degrees north of the Arctic Circle, where the sun doesn't set for at least 3 months. I wanted to let you know that none of the people calling into your show know what's really out there. They're telling cute stories about bumps in the night, but they're not talking about the things that live behind the shadows. The things that wait for you to fall asleep in the dark. None of them know what it feels like to wake up and find out that everyone has been taken from you. Some kind of punishment, maybe for the bad things you did in the past. Things you can't even remember. These things that hide in the dark, in the shadows, but I don't know what they look like. I call them the fates, because they pick you. There's nothing you can do about it. You don't need to trespass on sacred ground or summon them with a spirit board. They just come for you, and that's it. When you're driving on a dark road at night and you see a shadow inside a shadow out of the corner of your eye, that's probably them. And if you saw them, then you're still alive now. That just means they didn't watch you that night. I love how they pick people. A roll of the dice and your number comes up. Maybe they don't even pick who to kill. Maybe they're slaves to the same fate that guides our daily lives. Our number comes up and they do the dirty work. I've talked to other people who know about them, who've lost someone. It always happens inside a house, and when the people are taken, it's always very, very messy. And that's what I saw. It was very messy. But then then the mess goes away somehow, almost like you black out, and the furniture isn't broken anymore like it was last night, and the cops think everyone you love just ran away, and you don't have proof. You don't have proof of what he saw, but he saw... He saw the bodies. I don't know why I called him. You can't touch a shadow, and if you can't touch him, you can't fight him. You just have to hope they don't pick you or your family. There's no way to stop them, because all they are is darkness. This isn't even a warning, because you can't do anything about it. It's just like fate, like I said. I guess this is good luck.
Freddie, I think first of all, we'd like to say we wish her well.
Well, and I've got some good news.
Yeah.
I've got some good news for her. She's not dead, because she made the phone call.
Yeah. Sounds like her whole family might be dead. Or,
well, yes and no. I mean, she said the furniture was broken and then not broken.
Yeah.
So this could be inner turmoil that she's having. Yeah. But either way, it's just her.
Yeah. She sounds like
it's just a reflection of her.
Yeah.
That she doesn't want to deal with.
Hmm.
That she's afraid to look into.
Wow, this is very psychoanalytical.
Yeah. Yeah. The shadows are you. You're the shadows.
All right.
Or not that lady, but you know, in a general term speaking, those are areas of yourself that you are afraid to look into and to accept. So you push them away, you run from them, you think they're going to kill you, but you're alive.
Yeah.
You're still here.
Yeah.
You know, and they're still chasing you until you turn around and look.
I've known people that have seen shadow people. I've never seen a shadow person. Like, I think like we were talking before, I keep my hate right there up front.
Yep.
So it keeps, so I don't have the shadow people because they're just, it's just all incorporated in me. But yeah.
So the shadows like looked at them or talked to them or?
One is a mutual friend of ours again. And I honestly believe he saw that he was actually... Him and his girlfriend were doing mushrooms, tripping together.
Okay.
And they both had an experience where they saw shadow people in like the corner that were apparently, they didn't speak to them or anything, but were watching them and moving around. And the interesting thing to me is like, I always get super fascinated whenever like the same myths or folklores get represented in across different cultures
throughout
time
and
striking similarity. And this is another one with shadow people, which almost every culture has some version of them. And one of the probable explanations for me that I always end up going back to the Islamic concept of jinn seeming to account for a lot of things. And basically from a modern non-religious standpoint, like it's basically jinn are on a different plane than us, a different creation that are almost they're free will entities like humans, but they aren't like ghosts or they're not directly connected to us. They're actually like a different class of creation, but they can do... So they can have families, there can be good ones, there can be bad ones, but because I guess they are supposedly were made of earth humans, but they are made of fire. And so they're in this other dimension, but somehow they have the ability to bleed through more into our world and affect us, which also... is
what are we to them? Are we food?
Yeah, no, not necessarily, because there's good ones, there's bad ones, there's apparently in the jinn thing, I don't necessarily think we're anything to them more than
do they come here with a purpose.
Not so much, like, from what I can tell.
Are we, like, a theme park for them?
Like, sort of, like, I mean, I guess for some
going
reason.
Going to Wet n Wild, Jim's World this weekend with the fam?
I think there's stories of, like, where Jin can fall in love with humans or have some beef with certain humans, but it's way more, it's not like they're, then in different, like, when you get more into demons and things, which is more of, like, a Christian concept.
Well, I'm trying to, like, then, put it into our realm. Yeah. Or, like, we in a fish tank in their apartment. Yeah. And every once in a while, they stick a finger in and
I don't know.
Poke us. Yeah.
Or maybe they can't stop the bleeding through either. And they're like, wait a second, why am I seeing these weird
creatures? Wondering, like, the interaction. I can imagine bumping into another dimensional being, like, by accident.
Yeah.
But do then they turn around and be like, oh, yeah, I'm totally here to, you know, mess with you.
Well, supposedly, I don't think the jinn in the Islamic concept, do have any real, like, that's where if you sort of switch it over to into demons, the Christian concept, then that seems to be more that they're, like, feeding off of us.
Yeah.
That they're, like, I've heard different tales, because, like, most of the interactions with shadow people seem to be fairly benign.
Well, where it's just people watching. Energy exchange, even eating food like we, you know, do, is we're taking energy from one thing by consuming it, you know. Yeah. So I could extrapolate out another version where in another dimension, somehow we exude energy that they can then transmute, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, how that process goes. I don't know. The Monsters, Inc. movie. Do you remember that movie?
I never saw it.
The kids movie?
Of it, yeah.
The premise is that they, like, scare the kids and then get the energy.
Well, that I think, is the theory behind a lot of stuff. Like, the Western version of, like, succubus and different, and, like, in sleep paralysis, like, hags coming to either, I don't know, rape you or choke you or something.
Once you understand that they're after your fear, I would think it'd make you less fearful.
Yeah.
Because you're like, hey, get off me.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
No more fear.
That is a common thing also of people, like, on Reddit and different places talking about these things. It's a common thing that you can, as soon as you stand up to them.
Yeah.
Then they disappear.
That's what I'm telling this lady.
Yeah.
Just turn around, walk right into that corner with the dark thing.
Yeah.
It won't be there.
Yeah.
Because it'll be like, oh, damn it.
Yeah.
We got to go.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I heard, but if she was saying her entire family was killed, or maybe she was talking hypothetically.
Yeah. There's a little bleed over of, like, kind of giving sort of schizophrenic, you know, and might be seeing another, you know, version of things that happened or didn't happen, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to downplay her her story or what she's feeling. So,
and speaking of schizophrenia, this just reminded me of another same buddy, actually, that saw the shadow people when he was on mushrooms with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
He's got a buddy who I've met before. So I know this guy is real and has these, that is incredibly schizophrenic. Like, you're like, typical, like, I mean, he's been locked up multiple times, and you can just tell. But the interesting thing where I was going to say is that, which I didn't see this, but I believe it because I've met the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Our buddy said he was there one time when his buddy Dan got taken to the hospital. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that his, he swears two things were going on. That one, Dan had supernatural strength. The guy that was schizophrenic was, like, throwing orderlies and guards around with, like, one arm, just flinging people through the air. And then he said his eyes actually turned completely black.
Yeah.
And to me, that, like, I always sort of lean towards that the schizophrenia thing might actually be possession.
Sure.
That it is something that
if these meat suits we're in are just avatars and somebody's got a controller somewhere, like we have a controller somewhere, and then somebody taps in and takes over the controller for a little while, knows how to do the A, B, B, C, D, you know, turbo boost button and get you some extra juice or energy.
And that's one of the interesting things I've heard about the theory with demons, is because basically they are... sort of from a spiritual level that are almost banished from being in a body.
Yeah.
Because they're so bad or something. And so that's why they're constantly trying to possess people, is they're looking for a way back in to the world. So it's like they basically are in this limbo state that they're not allowed to, go to, I don't know if they're like, you know, all kinds of speculation on what happens after you die, but apparently they're in this limbo state where they're banished from going to heaven and they can't go back into a body. So they become just consumed with the idea of getting back in to do physical stuff on the physical plane.
Right. Yeah. Hey, you know, teach their own.
Yeah.
You got to do that stuff. Yeah. I mean, I'm just going down the no fear, you know, because it seems like do you ever watch a movie anymore? You remember as a kid how scared you were of things?
Yeah, I was thinking about that recently.
Amityville Horror, house scared the living crap out of me. But I watch it these days, I'm like,
yeah,
those are flies.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of them. There's a lot. But the stuff that your mind did was 10,000 times scarier than the actual movie you were seeing.
Yeah.
You know? And
some of it's almost comical.
I thought that blood hallway scene was like the most terrifying thing I'd ever seen when I was a kid.
Remember the Shining, the scene with the little kid on the tricycle and then the two twin girls sitting in red rum? I remember for years I didn't even want to see a clip of that because I was like, oh, it's going to freak me out. It's so scary. And now I just saw it recently and I just kick one of those chicks in the face.
Don't kick kids anymore, Jim.
Well, it was a demon kid.
Yeah.
It was a demon kid.
But yeah, it is. It's weird. So if you can do that with yourself, like when you're in the middle of a super scary, you know, I think that's the answer.
Yeah, I do think there's something to that. That fear is because fear also is kind of the opposite of faith, which almost every religion talks about, like belief and faith being important to them. Yeah. And it's so I think there is something. Fear is then sort of makes sense because we're in this mortal universe.
Yep.
And your challenge is to act better than if you were just thinking you were going to die all the time. You'd be constantly like freaked out and scared and making selfish choices and grabbing and trying to control things. And so everything that leads towards the better choice is all about letting go of that, even though you're on a mortal plane. So it's like, it is like, fear definitely has something to do with all the bad and negative dragging you down. And then not having fear allows you to act in the better way, I'd say.
Yeah.
So, and so it makes sense. So like negative spiritual beings would be feeding off of that probably and trying to rev that up in you.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, so now let's get to the next call four, which is just about good old murder.
Getting back to the basics.
Getting back to the basics. Talking about fear. So, if a demon isn't going to get you, I would just, to preface this call, say that Detroit has the fourth highest murder rate among major cities in the United States. St. Louis and Baltimore have more. But Detroit's up there, and I'm not sure if this call is indicative of a serial killer, but the FBI estimates that at any given time in the United States, there are 25 to 50 active serial killers that are working, lots of which they just see the remnants, the killed people, and can figure out there's a pattern there, but they don't announce it, and they just conclude there's a serial killer. And I actually, this reminds me of all my stories relate back to when I was in Montana again. This time, there was a speaker that came that was, I don't know if you remember the movie Silence of the Lambs with Jodie Foster.
Yeah, her of course.
Boss, and that was based off of this guy. The guy, the real life guy, is the one who began the serial killer profiling unit of the FBI. Mm-hmm. He came to speak at the university.
Yeah.
And listen to him. It was fascinating because he had interviewed every major serial killer, and he had a slideshow where he would show pictures of him like shaking Ted Bundy's hand, John Wayne Gacy, like all these people. And then he would go into these stories about what these serial killers would admit to him. Uh-huh. Off the record. And it was just fascinating, the way that of trying to figure out the psychology behind it. And then he was the first person that I'd ever heard who said, not to freak you guys out, but the press, you know, obviously doesn't know what we know. And he gave a similar number. He was like, at any point, we've got evidence that there's probably like, you know, 20 to 30 people out there that are functioning serial killers that there's just no way to.
Well, I saw a scientific program that was based on serial killers, and it looked at their brain, like they cut open their brains they mapped their brains.
Yeah.
And they had very similar, like, I don't want to say a hole, but there was a missing part or there was a darkened part.
That's
of
like
their
the
brain.
Same thing with like sociopaths.
Yeah.
I think they are starting to do scans to.
Yeah, they're just missing a whole bunch of neural connections, which, you know, allow you to have your empathy and, you know, that's so they're accelerated in some parts of their brain. And then there's just missing other parts of their brain, which kind of is the perfect cocktail.
Yeah. Would it sort of make sense from and also going back to the morphic resonance thing we were talking about and all this stuff, is if you believe in a consciousness is the core of mm-hmm. the universe's consciousness, so it's not individually created by our brains.
Mm-hmm.
It's our brains are more like a receiver
that
downloads parts of the consciousness, and out of that, all of the material world is born.
Yep.
And so if somebody's receiver is fucked up, where it's not getting all the info, like it's not getting the good stuff,
well,
then you can imagine
it
like
might
that
be
they're
fucked up on purpose. Like somebody's got to go down that.
Well,
that
fucked
up hallway to see what's at the end of it. And, you know, that guy, Ted, just got picked or picked himself. I don't know how it works in the selection process, but somebody picked to go down that hallway to experience that so they could upload it to the collective.
That's a ballsy dude where he's just like, I'm going to go to Earth and this time I'm going to be a cannibal.
I don't think it's that's crazy, because what happens to you, like, when you've played a video game for a whole bunch of times?
Yeah, you get
what
bored.
What do you do?
You get bored.
You start running over pedestrians on the side of the road.
Exactly.
You know, jumping cars off the top of buildings to squish people. It's just, I think we all have it in there somewhere.
Yep. And if you really are looking at, this has always been a point that I try to make, if you're looking at thing on an infinite time scale, like if you're really here forever and this is just one incarnation, then it becomes way more likely people making that decision or not, like, because it's just, it does become more of a.
Well, if the whole thing is about expansion, you have to literally expand into every crevice to expand further.
Yeah.
Once you've covered everything, then you can move on to the next iteration of expansion.
Yeah.
But somebody's got to cover every square inch of this this consciousness expansion. So maybe these guys are just the ones.
I think we chose right this time, Freddy, to not be cannibals.
Yeah. That one.
We can feel good about that.
That one lifetime we were was totally.
Yeah, that was gross.
It was so gross.
All right. So now we'll get to Smook calling in from Detroit. And I'll just call this call Surprise Dead Body. Smook, take it away.
Yo, this is Smook. I wanted to tell you all a crazy-ass story from around 2008, 2009 in Detroit. That this was back when all the home foreclosures were going on and stuff. And Detroit was always sketchy in parts, but back then it was really bad, like lots of people living on the street, losing their jobs and houses and stuff like that. And at the time, I lived downtown Detroit and was a pop-a-lock guy. And what I mean is, I was like a locksmith, somebody that you called to break into your own car or house or something like that. I had some certain skills in that area, if you know what I mean. And back then, the business wasn't done through apps and everything. Most of it, we were still just getting phone calls. And I get a phone call on a Monday night, a little bit after 9 p.m. And I remember because I was watching Monday Night Football and honestly did not want to get off of my couch and go help this guy. But he was saying he was at the Greyhound bus station. He had parked his car, and as he got his bags out of the trunk, he somehow dropped his keys in the trunk, shut the trunk back, and he needed to get his keys out of the trunk before the bus left. And the bus was about to leave in 45 minutes, so he was all panicked, and he needed me to come down there and break into his trunk for him. So I agree to do it for a rush fee, and I get all dressed up and get my coat on and my boots and everything, and I drive down there, and he had told me that he was going to meet me in front of the car, that it was a white 1999 Toyota Corolla with a Detroit Pistons bumper sticker on the back. And so as I'm driving down there, I'm looking for cars, and there's plenty of Toyota Corolla type looking cars everywhere. But I finally see about a block away from the bus station what appears to be a white Toyota Corolla with the Detroit Pistons bumper sticker on it. And so I pull up, I park, and there's nobody there at the car, but I figure this guy's in such a panic and everything that maybe he's gone to, go to the bathroom or something, and we'll be back in a minute. And since, again, it was cold and I didn't really want to be out there and I wanted to be watching the game at home, I just decided to go ahead and pop his trunk for him to at least get that taken care of, since I knew he was in a rush. And normally we do always are supposed to check the ID of the person prior to opening a car for them, so we can get that information recorded and then confirm that they're the owner of the car before we let them access it. And but again, I was just, you know, in a rush and cold and wanted to get home, so figured I'd do it while I was waiting for him to get back to the car. The problem was, though, when I popped the trunk, I looked down and there is a body, a dead man, in the trunk. And I was like, what? Almost fell back on my butt. I was so startled. I couldn't see the entire body, but I'm pretty sure it was a man, because there was a white guy wearing loafers with no socks. I could see the color of his skin and white pants, and then the rest of him was wrapped up in a bunch of blankets and covered up, that I could see blood through some of the blankets. I am freaking out at this point, and I think about calling 911, but then I know I'm close to the bus station, so I decide to run there, thinking there might be a cop in there. And I don't know why, that was just my first instinct. I run into the bus station and up to the guy that is at the terminal and ask him if there's a cop there. There's not, and tell him what's going on. And he tells me to call 911. And so I do start to call 911 to get a cop there. And then as I go back to the car, as the police are showing up, the guy that called me never showed up. And that wasn't his car, apparently. That car was gone by the time the cops got there. Whoever had murdered the dude, I don't know if he was close by or what, but apparently had jumped back in the car and driven off. And so when the cops get there and I get back to the car, there's just the parking, empty parking space. and the cops don't really believe me. And the worst part of it maybe was that poor dude the actual guy that called me never got his trunk opened, I don't think, because I just got some voicemails from him cursing me out before he got on his bus going to Florida or whatever. So, long story short, that's my best story from back in 2008, Detroit. And this is Smook. Love the show.
Yeah, so that might not have been a serial killer. That could just be a crime of hate.
It's just an average, everyday murder.
Yeah, so.
You know, run in the mill.
Yeah, just trying to make it more sexy, bringing in serial killers.
Yeah, because, there was only one body in the trunk.
Yeah, I didn't mean to get you all excited for multiple bodies. Have you ever found a dead body? I think you would remember. I would.
I probably would.
Yeah.
It's been animals.
Yeah.
It's unnerving.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like you see the poor thing on the road and it's like, it only made it that far across and
it
didn't look like it. Then it made it a little bit further. Too much.
It is kind of weird to think of all the, because I think as humans and modern society, as we'll call America, that we have a comfort level that there's not a lot of violence going on that we don't know about. Like, we assume the news, like if somebody gets killed, you kind of say, oh, well, so people are going to find out about that. The news will cover it and the police will arrest them. And I think the reality is there's a lot more stuff falling through the cracks than even if the cops aren't killing people themselves, which is in many circumstances potentially what's going on. So it's like, I think there's a lot more seedy, intense, dangerous stories that never get told that probably people are getting away with.
There's gotta be. I mean, the news is not even a good source for that type of stuff.
Oh yeah.
Like unless it seems to be motivated to create some sort of narrative.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd really see anything on the news that you should be seeing.
Yeah.
So if you're going to keep a body count based on the news, it's going to be pretty slim.
Yep. This story reminded me of a event. I didn't come across a dead body, but this just tie in, not at all that I'm saying that like all police are not doing things or are dropping the ball. But I had an instance where I was in a area here in Tampa where lots of people, go out at night and stuff like that. And I saw a guy driving. Let's see. It was the woman was driving, but I swear the guy had like a gun held up to her and had her by the back of a hand on the back of her head.
Oh,
and she seemed obviously in distress and they drove by and I was out front of the bar and clearly saw this. And since it was in a nightlife activity area, wait,
clearly drunkenly saw this.
No, I wasn't that drunk though.
Oh.
No, I was, I'm certain I saw
if
this.
I was, yeah. I was,
well,
attorney,
but maybe
I'd be like,
yeah,
so but, you stumbled out of the bar. Yeah.
Well, but maybe that, maybe that's what the cop thought.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe that's a good way to let him off. But like, since it was like, lots of people going out in this area, there was a cop like at the next block, I think, or so that I'd seen. So I immediately go over and try to explain to this cop what I saw. And he just, the whole thing, and literally, I mean, I saw what looked to me like a woman being abducted.
Yeah.
And I explained to the cop, and his whole response is just kind of standing there, like, okay, what do you want me to do? Call it in? And I was like, I'm not a cop. Yes. What do you normally do when somebody sees someone getting kidnapped and by gunpoint? And so I think he did sort of lazily call it in, like, yeah, we might have seen somebody under stress in a car, like, but that was it. That was the whole
thing. They're more revenue generation business.
Yeah.
You saw,
if I had said you can impound this, it was a Mercedes and you can impound it, you would have been like.
There's a car parked up on the curb.
Yeah.
Back a block over yeah. there.
Needs to be ticketed.
Right.
Yeah.
That, you know, that
SWAT team. Yeah. SWAT team rolls up.
Yep.
Yeah, starts ticking it in the car.
You know, maybe somebody's doing donuts over there on that street. Maybe get some. Oh, okay. We can get some tickets going for that. But, you know. Abductions and having to chase a guy.
Yeah, it is a lot.
And find out things, file paperwork.
Yeah.
That's not, and then there's no tickets really to be written. Yeah. You're going to make all your money on the court cases if you actually get to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that for a beat cop is a, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. He's only on for another 2 hours.
What if that was Sue? The one, the lady that had the shadow people?
Uh-huh.
The one that called in from, What if that was just the start of her problems?
They can drive way back. Cars?
I don't know. It was like 15 years ago, so it was, yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't look like a shadow person.
Probably you were probably the fourth...
abduction story that cop had to listen to that
night. Some sort of emergency story that he heard that night from somebody who just came out of one of the bars.
Yeah.
Like, you know... So, in perspective, I'm sure he's just like, oh, okay, another one.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I'm sure there are cops that try harder.
They go full on for that sort of stuff.
They probably just get beaten out of them very quickly. He was probably just thinking like, there's nothing we can do. Even the guy's just going to claim he's not abducting her. And
I mean... They're kind of pigeonholed at this point to, you know, what they do.
Yeah.
They're good at pulling you over for speeding and writing you some tickets for missing lights. And
yeah, I'm surprised he didn't give me a ticket for public intoxication.
That would have probably been more likely.
Yeah, nobody. We're not gonna bother with that. But here's a $50 ticket.
That's the low hanging fruit.
Yeah. well, I guess the story there is I dodged a bullet.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you.
So, speaking of drunken activity, though, this will lead into our final call of the day.
All right.
Which is just kind of a funny story. It's a lighter note to end on about a drunk guy named Diesel in Philadelphia. And this story is called the Hey Kool-Aid Story.
Hey there, I wanted to call in a real quick funny story about my buddy Diesel while I was on my lunch break. So... Diesel is basically like a redheaded dwarf looking guy. Never had much luck with women, as a pot belly, red, bright orange, red hair, red beard, about 5'5", maybe at best. Not a ladies' man by any means. And he used to go out to the bars where we live in Philadelphia all the time and just repeatedly get shot down by women over and over again. And Diesel would drink himself into almost every night he went out. He'd drink himself into being blacked out drunk. When he would go home to his shitty apartment, which is like a really old condo conversion building with paper thin walls where you can hear everything. Somehow he got in the habit of sleeping, passed out drunk in his closet. And I think it was because either the light was coming in the window too much from the street lamps outside, or maybe he just sort of like a dog or something felt more secure sleeping in the tight quarters of the closet. I'm not sure, but anyway, he would regularly pass out drunk there. One time he wakes up in the middle of the night, it's pitch black in the closet, and somehow he thinks that he's been buried alive. And so he starts immediately thrashing, freaking out, hitting against the walls. He ends up starting to bang his fist over and over again and claw at the back wall of the closet, which is extremely thin, flimsy, like plaster material that he starts to break through. And now you've got to switch perspectives to the person in the apartment next, Diesel, who happens to be an older Chinese woman that has insomnia and stays up all night watching Chinese shopping shows on her TV, which is right next to where Diesel is breaking through her wall. And we call the story the Hey Kool-Aid story because, yet I imagine from her perspective, all of a sudden she's just watching her shopping show at 1 a.m. and then this red-headed pudgy dwarf starts busting through her wall into her living room. And you would think there would probably be like the cops called and this kind of stuff. But the most hysterical part of all of this is that Diesel and the Chinese woman, who is about 20 years older than him, end up falling in love. They apparently redheaded dwarves are attractive in China. I don't know. But somehow they start dating. They actually ended up getting married and even having a kid. So it's actually like a feel good story that I guess if you are a redheaded dwarf looking guy, maybe look for Chinese women or just bust through the wall. Thanks a lot. Hope you like the story. Love the show.
So there you go. Upbeat story to end on. Did you get the
nice.
Did you get the Hey Kool-Aid reference? You remember
the
commercial?
Yeah, I remember back in the day when a big fat pitcher of Kool-Aid would blast through people's houses.
Yeah, and brick walls and things.
Yeah, what did he say hey though?
I think that was his tagline. Hey Kool-Aid.
Hey Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Why don't I remember that part?
What do they call that when the collective memory?
Oh, yeah. Didn't he say like, oh yeah, or something like that? Like, oh. Macho Man.
Oh, you're right. There was somebody that said, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Boom. I thought that was the Kool-Aid guy.
Huh. I thought he said, hey, Kool-Aid.
No, I don't think so.
What do they call that when you remember when, like, with the Bernstein Bears becoming the Bernstein?
You're just from a different timeline where he said, what did he say? Hey, Kool-Aid.
Hey, Kool-Aid.
No, he said, oh, yeah.
Like, I'm going to have to pull that up and see what it is.
I'm sure everybody remembers my version of it because, hey, Kool-Aid.
Like, well, I was just going off of what he called the story. Oh. So that somehow once I heard that made sense to me. Huh?
Yeah.
What, you just think he says, oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. After he blasts through the wall.
Huh.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. All right.
Like, it's like fresh fruit flavor.
Huh. We'll have to check into this, Freddie, because,
But, I've woken up in weird places like that, and you think you're, you know, confined or something. You just start scurrying your way out.
Yeah. You can imagine. Totally like that. Yeah. Hysterical if you just wake up asleep and somehow your brain tells you've been buried alive and just start trying to kick and claw to get your way out.
Yeah, especially if it's dark and you don't have any frame of reference of where you were. I've woken up in the bushes before. That was weird because you're kind of hanging. You're not on the ground. You sort of only made it to about 3 or 6 inches above the ground because you're suspended from these like branches. And
did you think you were caught in a massive spider web? Start thrashing around before the giant spider got to you?
It was awkward. It was weird. It was outside my dorm. Like, I was trying to get into the dorm, but somehow through the window of the dorm, not through the front door.
Sure.
It must have been closer. I don't know. But
makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it did. And it was sun. The sun is what woke me up. Like,
yeah. I think we've all been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's nothing. Nothing out of the ordinary for Diesel either. I'm glad it finally worked out for him. That's a story of fate, I think.
That is a fertile Chinese woman, by the way.
Yeah.
She'd had to be in her 40s.
Yeah. Well, maybe they had, we don't know their medical history. Maybe they had some help. Maybe they had a test tube.
Oh, maybe they adopted.
Yeah, maybe they adopted. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a lot of ways that story could end poorly. But
way worse.
It's kind of optimistic for one time a redheaded dwarf guy
won. You know, and what I was thinking while he was telling the story is like, now is that guy's time. Like with TikTok and all these social media things, people that are cartoons, it's never been a better time for them.
Really?
How's that? Because you get a following for being...
Oh, for being ridiculous
for
looking?
Being somebody who stands out.
Okay.
Now is your time to shine.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I don't even pay attention to TikTok.
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants boring people like us.
Yeah.
They want, short, I mean, as long as you're entertaining and you're unique, this is your decade.
Wow.
Like,
nice.
You just film yourself doing whatever it is you do. And
Recently, there was some video somebody forwarded me of just like a fat guy eating.
Yeah.
That had a massive following. It was awful.
There's everything now, Jim.
Yeah.
It was everything.
Horrible.
The more unique, the better. Like, you just rise to the top of, you know, oh, that's something new. That's a weird looking guy.
Yeah.
Like, weird looking people just have followings because of that. They don't even have to really talk. You could just have a long neck.
Really?
And, yeah. Huh. It's great. I like
it. And they make money because they've got enough.
If you get enough. And then if you do start doing, you know, you get it to where you have lives and then people interact with you and they start clicking and liking and you get, you know, get money from that. But yeah, I think we're embracing everybody's idiosyncrasies in this age. And it's kind of awesome because, you know, before everybody's like, you're not normal looking and you don't fit the mold. But now we've gone the other direction and now it's like, if you have something unique about you, it's being, it's being lauded. Like people like it.
Yeah.
Like, you'll find your people.
Yeah.
So Diesel missed out. He just missed out by a generation.
Well, but I mean, he sounds fine.
Well, he's a father now.
Yeah. So it all worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could literally start, even as a father, he could start his own TikTok today.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if he still has
I wonder red if the, hair. I wonder if the baby, if it was their biological baby, how the baby turned out.
Stocky, I'm getting. Just what imagining. If,
He didn't really describe the old Chinese woman, though.
Oh.
Yeah, she could have been thin and tall.
I don't, for all there, we know. I don't know if there are bigger Chinese women.
Hmm.
Most of them are petite, right? Like, if you like let's stereotype people really here, Jim.
Yep.
But
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. They speeds things up. Yeah.
No, but if I'm thinking of prototypical like Asian woman, I'm kind of imagining petite because they're tinier. Right?
Yeah. Well, like, I definitely, height, but you
except
gotta,
for the basketball player.
I mean, like. Japanese women are definitely more petite.
Okay.
Yeah. For some reason, I think of Chinese women as stockier, but I don't know if that's just because the cadence of their speech is way more aggressive than in Japan. So I think somehow that defaults into my brain is that they're stockier than, because Japanese are real. Japanese women are real. They
those
speak
are the
softly.
Right?
Yeah. They speak softly and they're very, very much more quiet in demeanor, in our gross generalizations of entire cultures.
Gross generalizations of.
But Chinese people, just in general, are very like, you like that extremely insulting noise I made to replicate the Chinese language?
It was your best horrible attempt at. You know,
I was
emulating.
Just trying to express the very abrupt way they speak.
It is kind of choppy.
Yeah. It's, and if you've ever been in Chinatowns in any big cities like in New York or San Fran or somewhere.
Yeah.
Also Chinese people, again, getting any of this gross overgeneralization. They have no sense of personal space.
Really?
Yeah. Well, no, that's a common thing. Like they will.
Do they do the trains like they do in Japan, where they have the shovers, and it, like you get
oh,
you have
I've
the
seen that.
Amount
yeah.
of people on the train that fit, and then you have like five
yeah,
other
and they
people
all just cram in,
and they have these big guys that shove them literally into
the train.
Oh, that's their job.
Oh,
is
I didn't.
Smush
I haven't seen
people
that.
People into the train so that they can then squeeze the doors closed. Yeah. And so there's zero personal space over there. But
and I'm visualizing it. Do they say, hey, Kool-Aid?
As
no.
No.
Okay.
That's
that's
that is a one-off of your own brain from your own dimension that has that character saying that tagline, a horrible tagline.
That would be a great tagline.
It might be your tagline.
Like
no.
Large Japanese guys shoving people in and just screaming, hey, Kool-Aid. I think that's we should be at the point of wrapping the show up now, Freddie.
All right.
We're starting to lose the plot.
Yeah.
So Yeah, so that would be it for the show. Those are our five calls, and we are excited to keep the calls coming in. I know we've got a few other ones that are already lined up for the next episode that should be very good, and just encourage anyone out there. Obviously, as you can tell from this discussion, we're open to any and all calls.
Call with good stories. Yeah. I'm kidding. We'll take anything. We love the idiosyncrasies of your stories.
I would like a serial killer to call in. That's what I'd like to. Is there any, you can call in anonymously. Just let us know what's going on, how it's working out for you.
Maybe not a serial killer. Maybe just a psychopath.
Okay.
Just so you can get a little, little taste. Do we need the whole meal?
Either one. Are there any other brackets, any other genres that you would especially like to hear?
Oh, man. Not off the top of the head that's going to top those two.
I definitely like paranormal, anything. I would like to hear more cryptid.
I would like anybody that's actually made it into space to call and tell me a story.
Yeah, that would be a good story.
I have some questions for you.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because you don't even think space
is real. I don't know about it. I've never been there.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll end on that Freddie doesn't know if space exists. And please check the show notes to call your story in. There's a link to the SpeakPipe in there. Super easy to do it. You just click on the link, record it from your phone, and it sends it directly to us. You can also check out yourbesttruestory.com for more information. We appreciate you listening. Please leave a positive review if you get a chance, and tune in next time. Thanks a lot.
Please be aware that Your Best True Story podcast cannot attest to the validity of any story contained within. Additionally, all podcast hosts have failed numerous IQ tests and been legally deemed idiots by the judicial branch of the state of Florida. Therefore, please seek second opinions from licensed attorneys, doctors, CPAs, and/or ventriloquists prior to leaving your job to hunt Bigfoot, dragging a stake through your sleeping spouse's heart due to vampiric suspicion, snipping, slicing, dicing, or gargling any substance, attempting to drive your automobile off of the flat earth, or attempting to overthrow any government over suspicion that they are lizard aliens. The Your Best True Story podcast does not purport to offer legal, financial, or gynecological advice. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Please wear your seatbelt at all times and keep your hands inside your own compartment. If there is a sudden loss of pressure, you do have our permission to scream. The Your Best True Story podcast takes no responsibility for divorce, bankruptcy, possession by an ancient demonic entity, or brain herpes. For everything else, we still take no responsibility, but we do feel very bad about it.
You got a crazy-ass true story to tell. It could be funny or thrilling or creepy as hell. And when you speak, surely none will make a sound. And the world's going breathless when your true story comes around. Oh, hear the crazy bullshit flying. Just one more maybe true story before we're dying. Yet be warned, surely not all stories will be treated the same. So don't blame us if your tale about grandma's cookies is lame. The only way to ensure you could possibly win a buck is to make sure that story of yours don't suck. So instead of yawns, go ahead and tell us how that Bigfoot or werewolf drowned, and then hear the world go breathless when your true story comes around. You'll hear the crazy bullshit flying. Just one more maybe true story before we're dying. Yet be warned, surely not all stories will be treated the same. So don't blame us if your tale about your grandma's cookies is lame.